Succession number 9185 are on number one.
Mr. Ken Johnston, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your background before the Second World War, Mr. Johnston?
Well, I'm a Geordie, of course, meaning that I was born in Newcastle upon Tyne. I lived with my mother, and we were in a place called Jesmond, which was a suburb of Newcastle upon Tyne. I was brought up in that area. I went to a school which was really a private school in the area, in Gosforth, and in that whole area I was very much involved later in the Scout movement, joining the Scouts, and thoroughly enjoying myself, and leaving school quite early because my mother was living on her own with me, and of course there was a certain need for more income. I think the rent of the flat was 12 and sixpence, about 60 pence, if you could work it out today, I don't know. So I went out and got a job at the equivalent sum. But of course I had to say that I was a little older than I was. In fact, I was just touching on 14. And I got a job as an office boy with a firm called Thomas Headley, who were soap manufacturers. They'd been taken over by Procter & Gamble, a very big American company. And there I was as the office boy, and bringing home the rent and living a very happy life.
You mentioned the Scouts there. In view of what of your later career, what sort of things did you do with the Boy Scouts in the sort of field craft and that sort of side of things?
Well, I entered fully into scouting. It was really my university, I suppose, having left school so early. I joined the 33rd Newcastle. They were in Oaklands, Gosforth. We had a large scout hut, very well run troop, and of course I went to camp with them and learned fieldcraft and all the scouting activities, and generally enjoyed the whole thing. And I think this helped me a lot towards enjoying the army.
How did your work career progress at that time?
Well, at Procter & Gamble, they were an American company, and they had a lot of sales statistics at that time. I went into that department and wanted to be on the road as a salesman, but I wasn't old enough. So when I was about 16, I got a job as a junior display man with them, and I came to Bath, which is where I'm speaking now. The reason why I've come back to Bath now is because at the very early time of my career I came here. I thought I'd like to end it here as well. However, I worked here in the area of Bath for about 3 months and was outside as a display man with the company. Then I again wanted to be out selling. They had a scheme where they had to collect a lot of money and their representatives had to be indemnified, so they had to be 21. And so friends in the office there put me in touch with Mr. Spink, who was the manager for H.J. Hines. So I then went as a junior salesman with H.J. Hines and always had to wear a bowler hat, a white collar, a dark suit, and carry a special little bag. And one of my first visits was selling olive oil, and I thought I'd go to some nursing homes because they used olive oil. And I was coming out with my bowler hat and my white collar and my dark suit and carrying this little black bag when a doctor coming in paused and looked at me and said, you're a bit young. Is this your first case? I think he meant a case for the maternity, not a case of Heinz beans.
So, what, were you still doing this when the war broke out?
Well, no, because of the fact that I got well known in the town through the gang shows which we put on, one of the scout commissioners asked me to go to the company which was actually making the cartons for Fairy Soap, that is, for Procter & Gamble, and therefore I went on that side as their sort of service and sales, not manager, but running their sales promotion side, and I was there when the war broke out, and that, in fact, was where I'd been there when I enlisted on the 8th of July 1939 in the Territorial Army, and my number was 91767. And I went across to Durham and joined the Durham Light Infantry. We were, the next week we were digging trenches, because soon after that, of course, we were embodied, enlisted.
What rank did you join as?
Well, I joined as a second lieutenant, and how this all happened was because at the age of about 17, I was very active in starting the gang shows in Newcastle upon Tyne with two other fellows, not much older than me, and we took a small variety theatre, and we decided to put a show on. And I remember I had ideas then about publicity. I asked the Duke of Northumberland to come, and he agreed, and the manager was so worried, he rushed out and bought a new evening dress, which was only a little variety theatre. We had a wonderful week. Ralph Reeder came up on the Saturday night, and that started a long friendship with him. And the gang shows progressed to the Empire Theatre in Newcastle, which was then a major variety theatre. And they were great successes. And because of this, I used to compare and go on whenever the scenery stuck, or was one of my fortes, I suppose. And the brigadier of the local territorial brigade said, we must get Ken Johnston in the TA, because then he could run our concert parties and things like that. And that is how I was actually approached to join. And of course there's a story about that, because soon after that there was general enlistment, and there were no more people going into the Territorial Army then. They had to go down, you know, through the proper channels as a private. I went straight in as a second lieutenant. And I did say to the brigadier, oh, can I bring my friend in? He said, oh, no, it's a bit late now. But I pleaded and got him in. And that was to start a great friendship. Of course, we've been friends already, but a long lifetime friendship. And as a result of getting him in, he started off into an excellent war record, a man called Dennis Hamilton, who later became a lieutenant colonel, got a DSO, and became Sir Dennis Hamilton. So we started together in the 11th Battalion, Durham Light Infantry.
Now, you say you were digging trenches immediately. What were you doing for the first few months?
Well, I hadn't any training at all. No sooner had we got there, and it was a pitman's battalion. They called all the officers by their Christian names. I mean, I was Mr. Ken, and so forth. No sooner had we got down to Berkeley and Chesterley Street in County Durham, than I think the war broke out on which particular day. It was a few months after that. And instead of being Saturday afternoon soldiers, we were suddenly digging trenches. And I was told to bring my kit and stay there. And so I was a second lieutenant, and I was in residence, really, at the drill hall at Berkeley and Chesterley Street, at the outbreak of hostilities.
So you hadn't had any formal training yourself?
Not really. I mean, I had very little training. I mean, the RSM did some weapon training round the back for the young officers. So I had very little formal training in the army. That is true, yes.
So is this where your Boy Scout experience came in valuable?
Very much. I mean, certainly from the point of view of wanting to be out and about, and for some reason they made me the transport officer. And I'm just looking here at going to Chiswick, to the London Passenger Transport Board, second lieutenant, from the 26th of March 1940 to the 20th of April, and taking a course. I remember we were skidding buses round the oily patches, and they said fit for qualification after experience in unit. Well, I've never been very good at cars, people laugh when they heard I was once a transport officer. But you see, the point was they were an all pitman battalion, and they had pit ponies in those days, and of course very few of them knew. In fact, in the British Army there was, compared with the American Army, a great lack of mechanical knowledge as regards driving. And I remember in Lambton Castle we were able to impress cars. We had wedding cars and local cars which we were able to impress for government use, and these pitmen were driving them round in the most terrible head-on collisions with trees, and these lovely old Daimlers being smacked into the trees, and these Geordies saying, well, I'm sorry, sir, I couldn't get my foot on the brakes quick enough. It was rather amusing, actually.
Did you have any other duties as transport officer?
No, I mean, this was the sort of thing that happened in the army. We had to spread the duties round, and we had a very limited number of vehicles at that time. I mean, there was no sign of jeeps or Bren gun carriers, or they were very simply trucks.
Where did you go from there then? Where were you first posted to?
We were spread in Berkeley, Anfield Plains, Stanley, and a lovely drill hall in Durham City, Giles Gate. There's one interesting story, because Dennis Hamilton, whom I've already referred to, and I went to a place called Lambton Castle, just outside of Newcastle, and there we were, two young officers with a very experienced regimental sergeant major called Connolly. He was a CSM then, company sergeant major, regular soldier, and about 100 men in the stables at Lambton Castle. And it was one other officer came for a time, a chap called Shipley, I think, from the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry. But otherwise, we were there on our own. And one morning, there was a story about rats having been about in the stable. And you must remember, we were about 20 miles away from a beautiful drill hall, and these chaps were living in stables. And they were pretty homesick, even at that time, to the early days of the war. And the story about the rats grew, and we were both very worried, and we got on to battalion headquarters, who got on to brigade headquarters, and the medical officer came, and the sentries would give stories about rats jumping around them, and the quartermaster in the stores talked about them rushing about through the potatoes. And we said, this is terrible, we can't have this. I mean, it's not sanitary, it's not hygienic. So eventually it was agreed to move, and we moved to Giles Gate. When we got to Giles Gate, all the sweethearts and wives were all out waiting for them. Years later, I met the head gamekeeper from Lambton Park, and he told me the whole thing had been a hoax. The two young officers were really taken for a ride by the CSM and the sergeant. There was never a rat to be seen. It was one of those anecdotes that you'll laugh about afterwards.
Did they take much advantage of you as a young officer?
Well, not really. I remember we got on very well, but of course there was this tremendous feeling. And I remember marching down a long hill into Chesterley Street from the Lambton Castle stables on a church parade. And they were quite late, actually. And we came stamping into the church with our boots, and everybody frowned and didn't do me any good. And so I gave them a real rollicking afterwards. And so on the way back, we went up this hill. Then we had to go down a hill into the camp again. It was icy on the road. And all the first sections, the three, started falling down. And one man fell on top of another man, and the whole lot were sprawling all over the road. And they could say, it's the ice, sir. We can't stand up. It's just another way of teaching a young officer not to take it out of them, you see. But those sort of relationships were good.
How long were you in the area, Chesterley Street and Durham generally area?
We moved from there. You see, the demands in France had then started. The 8th Battalion had a great deal of casualty, the tremendous losses. So we started sending out reinforcements. And I remember taking down a trainload of reinforcements to their camp in Devon, where they were collecting under Brigadier Churchill before going into France. And of course I had with me a lot of the chaps the 8th Battalion had thrown out and didn't want to take anyway. And here we were sending them back again as reinforcements before they left for France. I remember in my enthusiasm, on the way down by train, which took a long time, about 10 hours or so in the train, in the long guards van, I had them in sections doing PT exercises while the train was going. So that gives an idea of what is enthusiasm. But the enthusiasm took a bit of a knock when I got to the camp, which was incidentally at a place called Churchill. I think the brigadier had chosen because it was his own name. And when they saw that I'd arrived with some of the blokes they didn't want, I remember they took me in the mess afterwards, took my trousers down, and gave me good kicking all round. It was good fun, though, but that's the sort of thing that happened. They went off to France, they had the casualties, and we started sending replacements, and I was the only group who were about to leave when Dunkirk occurred. So we then moved straight down to a point between Start Point and Dawlish, where we took up a position along coastline, waiting for any attack which might come. And we were on Slapton Sands, where the Americans came later and became well known to the Americans later on. We had our small landmines, we had wire out, but we had very little armament. And I remember one officer being put on a charge by the brigadier because he didn't have a revolver, until it was explained to the brigadier that it wasn't his turn to wear the revolver, as we only had one between six of us. And I was in a large house, Stanborough House, deep in the countryside, with all the men down around the stables, and I was in this great four-poster bed with a rather tattered old bell rope, and the signal was that I had to pull the bell if I wanted an alarm, a turnout. Well, the admiral at Plymouth, I think, was a little jittery. The code word was Cromwell, and whether he let this go by mistake or it was just an alarm, I certainly got this through from our own battalion headquarters, Cromwell. So I pulled the rope, which came away in my hand, rushed downstairs, and all the troops came tumbling out. We had an assortment of vehicles. We had two motorcycle and sidecars. We had a wedding car from the village, which we'd impressed. We had two buses and several solo motorcycles and two trucks. And so we piled into these, and the whole lot went racing out of the gates. The wedding car got stuck in the gates, and the turmoil, which was really like a film. And we raced down the lanes to Slapton Sands, and I think if Hitler had seen us, he really would have had a good laugh, because it was absolute pandemonium. But after that, we practiced, and our turnout got terrific, and we were making it in about 10 minutes down those lanes.
What would you think of your overall, as a battalion, of the overall standard of training and efficiency?
And efficiency at that time? Well, we were starting from the ground roots. I think that we had a lot of leeway to make up. We certainly did our field craft, and we did our weapon training. There then started these TEWTS, the tactical exercises without troops. Well, you see, there was the regular officer who always rather looked down, I thought, on the territorial army officer, and the regular officer may or may not have been particularly bright. Some of them were bright, but they were the sort of gurus who came and stood, and whilst you shivered on the countryside, and they pointed with their stick where the woods and how enemy would come out of here, and how we would take our position here, and how we would give enfilading fire there. And they were basing themselves on years of their own training, which sometimes had been, I would have thought, fairly slow-paced. In other words, there were some good regular officers, there were some pretty poor ones, and it was lucky whom you would get to go through on one of these tutes, as they called them. It was very, very varied for an officer trying to find out, you know, what military training really was, and at the same time having to get his own men into a form of army life. So it was because I was interested in a way, particularly always on the leadership side, that possibly I enjoyed the army, and I enjoyed being out and bivouacking and the field work, and this led me, I suppose, to being selected to go on a course very early on.
What was the nature of that course?
Well, the nature of the course was officially called the we called it the Assault and Battery. I must say there were two ways of looking at courses in the army. You sent the most nuisance person on a course to get rid of him, which was very often a reason why somebody went on a Cook's course and had nothing to do with it. People went on courses on a subject and came back and never again employed their knowledge. This course, I don't think it was because they wanted to get rid of me at all. I think it was simply because it suddenly had the name of fieldcraft and assault and battle, assault and battle, it was called. We called it assault and battery. And they sort of said, oh, that's the thing for Ken, I suppose. Anyway, there I was down in Snowdonia, and the commanding officer was a Royal Welsh Fusiliers, and there was an amazing sergeant in charge of demolition. And it was a course which was to become renowned in the army, because the sergeant in charge of demolition did amazing things, and his reputation went all over the place. I mean, for instance, on the way back from being out over in the Snowdonia, in order to let the mess waiters know that you were within distance and sort of get the meal on, they threw a series of grenades as signals. And the whole attitude was one where, I must say, live grenades and demolition equipment was handled in a way that you would just say you're eating a meal of egg and bacon. And the attitude was one of, if you reported sick, you had to go back to the unit. That was the end of it. So I actually got a most enormous boil on my foot, I remember, and down in the Dalbarden Hotel, which is where we had our headquarters, I used to get the sentry to bring a bucket of cold water about 5 a.m, so I could put my foot in to reduce the swelling in order to get my boot on, and I also surreptitiously got the village doctor to deal with it. But I didn't know that the commandant knew this was going on. And I was able to survive the course, but as a result, I was rather chuffed to find what the report was. And of course, one has to not appear to be immodest in doing this, but after all, I am replying to your questions. I notice it's called Western Command Assault and Battle School, Dalbarden Hotel, Flamberis, course number 4, from the 19th of March, 1942. To the 2nd of April 1942. I see here that I am now a captain, and that the general report says this officer was probably one of the most outstanding of the students since these courses began. He remained cheerful under very trying conditions due to a poisoned foot and never lost his powers of leadership. He went to immense trouble to look after himself. Without this, he would never have got through. Fieldcraft, tactics, map reading and compass, first-class leadership, outstanding, cool and inspires confidence. Assault and endurance showed outstanding perseverance in continuing the course long after being reduced to semi-crippled state by the poison foot. Joined fully in the rigours of the course until the 11th day. And that is signed by the commandant at Flamberis, the 1st of April, 1942.
So what exactly did you do on the course? Could you run through the sort of training that you did there?
Well, there were forced marches across places like the Watkins Pass in Snowdon, night marches. There were usually exercises where you had to reach a place, blow it up and come back again in a specified time. There was a great deal of physical effort. And sometimes you were being attacked on the way back and so forth. It was a basic course for toughening one up. And I suppose it was because I got that perhaps good report that I then seemed to be earmarked for courses.
What other courses did you go on?
Well, at that time, there was a great move towards training of officers in a tactical sense. At Barnard Castle, a course had been set up about this time, known as the GHQ Battle School, and I went on the fourth course. This was really, coming from the time of Dunkirk, this great urge to really induce a great deal of toughness. I mean, we were carrying buckets of pig's blood and throwing them over figures of Germans, and instructors were screaming, "Can you kill a German?" in your ear. And I remember we had casualties too, because we were to run and lie down, face downwards on incline, and then run 50 yards and lie down again, and the fire was to come over our heads, and it was live. And there was an instance, I know, where the Bren gun must have sunk into a sandbag or not been readjusted. Certainly, some people had bullets entering their heels because the fire had come too near them, and there were casualties. In fact, there were questions asked in the House, I believe, about it, but there was this enormous urge to try and toughen everyone up. And I was there in the carrier platoon, because the Bren gun carrier was now a great feature of the infantry, and my report there, I'm glad to say, was a distinguished one. I got a medal with D on it, and it was signed by the colonel, I think Mardell. It was countersigned by the colonel, who said well done, and also by the Major General Curtis, who was our brigade commander, who said, excellent, you are a great asset to the division. Well, he's the divisional commander, I'm sorry, the divisional commander, Major General Curtis. And the report said, 11th of June 1942, Barnard Castle, worked very hard and showed great keenness. Knows carrier work well, should make a good chief instructor of the carrier wing. Well, there I was, you see, noted again from an instructing point of view.
Now, prior to this, you had been on earlier course, because this was in 1942, that those two courses we've just discussed. A course while you were in Iceland and an earlier course. Do you think you could just fill in a little about those, the first courses you went on?
Just to be a little retrogressive there, I had been to the Force Tactical School, which was held from the 23rd of November 1941 to the 10th of December, and that was in Iceland, because you see, after guarding the Devon and Cornwall coast, we went to Newton Abbot, and we moved subsequently to Iceland. Incidentally, all our baggage trucks were bombed at Newton Abbot, so somebody must have known we were moving. We went to Iceland because the Germans had occupied Norway, and it was felt that possibly they may try and do the same thing in Iceland. So we went to Iceland by ship from Glasgow. Included in the ship's complement, of course, were, I say of course, because the sort of thing that happened, I'm afraid, there were a section to do with railway transport, and they were all the forms for rail transport, and there was a rail transport officer and a sergeant. Of course, I've never had a railway in Iceland, and it was just one of those amusing things that happened in wartime. But in Iceland, we were stationed around Reykjavik, and that is why I went on this course on the 14th of December 1941. And then I see again I was on a course under a Lieutenant Colonel Todd Hunter on the 11th of January 1942, which was a short officer's course. And there again, you see, one was... that was a course more or less everybody went on. But I was pretty well earmarked as somebody who presumably did well on courses and possibly could impart the knowledge again afterwards.